Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I am writing this raw and wiping tears after yet another chat with my young kids to explain that Daddy didn't mean to get so mad. Daddy still loves ye and loves me. Daddy just sometimes can't take being busy and gets angry. Daddy didn't mean to shout and say those horrible things to us. You see, their daddy, my husband, suffers from depression. And unfortunately, when he feels under pressure, his anxiety comes out as anger. And we, as his family living with him, have to bear the brunt of it. He does see a doctor and is taking medication and openly discusses his depression and anger with me and his doctor. So that is why these episodes are not constant. If you took what he says and does when he gets angry on his own, then anyone would be saying, take yourself and your kids out of there and don't look back. But I know that it is the depression that makes him that way. And when he is not suffering from a bout of it or an episode, then our home life is great and he's a great dad, husband and family man. But now I'm hearing myself sound like so many women that are victims of abuse that make excuses for the treatment they get at the hands of their partners and say things like, ah, but he really is a good man. Sounding like someone completely taken in by the abuser. However, I also feel my case is different because in the general running of things in the house, on the farm, I have complete say in what we do, and in a lot of cases I take full charge of organising things. We always, always discuss any financial spend, and my husband is not a man to go on weekends away with the lads or nights out. Like I say, he is a very good family man. That is of course until he gets under pressure with work, or when faced with a problem and he just can't handle it, and then he is not so nice. Angry side comes out. It is horrible and upsetting and really stressful and disruptive to us as a family. When he feels like this, then a controlling side comes out in him, sometimes questioning where I am and why aren't I at home working on the farm. But now I come to the point. I would love to get advice from anyone, professional or a person in a similar situation, to know how to deal with these episodes and also how to use the correct language, other than that of a mother who loves her children and wants to protect them, to explain to my children that Daddy doesn't mean to say the things he says and he does love all of us. There's plenty of advice for sufferers of depression, but I would like there to be more for the spouses and families of depression sufferers. More so even for those living and working on farms, as there is the added element of dealing and caring for animals and keeping the business running. To be honest, it can be wearing for me a lot of the time. On top of trying to work my own job, trying to work on the farm, trying to keep on top of the paperwork and bills, trying to keep the house running, trying to ensure the shopping is done, meals are cooked, laundry is done, and of late homeschooling. On top of all that, then I need to cope with a husband who is not 100% all of the time. Then I have the added task of trying to manage my own hurt feelings for what he has said and trying to ensure that our children are not affected by the outburst and trying to reassure them that Daddy is just in a very bad mood. His behaviour is not right and he will be better tomorrow. You know, sometimes that tomorrow comes within an hour and sometimes it may not come for a few days. But I feel somewhat thankful that it does come and glad for my kids' sake that their daddy does come back to them and he does say sorry for his bad mood. Am I just making excuses? Should I leave what a lot might perceive as an abusive relationship or should I continue to be understanding of my husband's illness and also understanding his regret when he has been really angry? Because he does always say sorry and explains to the kids that he just got really mad over something and he still loves them. So if there are any other wives or in particular wives of farmers that are also living with this type of situation or have been through it and come out the other side, I would love to hear their stories, to know that I am not the only one and to maybe get some advice on how best to deal with it all, and I mean all of it, husband, children and farm. Thank you very much for taking time to read my email. Anonymous. Letter voice by Anna Donahue.
Welcome to the Irish Country Living Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Irish Country Living Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Donahue. What you just heard there is a letter that was sent in to us by a reader. It's in this week's Irish Country Living, accompanied by a full reply from Claire Lyons Ford. Claire is a counsellor from County Kerry. She's worked with us previously. She has taken up some of the tough Dear Miriam problems that we would have in, and she has replied to this letter for us also this week. I've gotten Claire on the podcast this week just to further expand on the advice that she's offered, and I suppose to explore these topics maybe a little bit more because they are quite complex. Claire and I discuss depression, what you can do if you're feeling depressed, where to go and the steps to take. Obviously, because it's very pertinent to this letter, depression suffers families and supports that are available for them. We also touched on domestic abuse and self-care. This week's podcast, guys, is a little bit more hard-hitting, a little bit more serious than normal, but nonetheless still very important to discuss and get out there. So do have a listen. Claire, good morning. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Good morning again, and thanks for having me on. It's good to be here. And hello to all the listeners.
Hello to all the listeners, is right. Are you, is it Kerry you're this morning, Claire, is it?
Yeah, so I live in Killarney, and so I'm based here, yeah. So I'm in a lovely part of the country.
Fantastic. And what's it like in Killarney this morning?
Killarney is, it's a little bit dull and overcast, but it's dry, you know, and I think we're looking forward to really good weather the coming days, you know. So sure, Kerry is lovely anyway, no matter what the weather is like.
We could be here having a Kerry loving now for the next half an hour, but we have work to do. Claire, so in this week's Irish Country Living, there's a letter in from a reader, and you've given a bit of advice to this reader. It's quite a hard-hitting topic, I think we'd both agree. This reader's husband suffers from bouts of depression. I suppose there's a lot of issues around that, both in terms of, is there support, enough support there for the families of depression sufferers? And also in these bouts of depression, in the letter, the reader said that her husband could sometimes be controlling, and there was a lot of an underlying current of abuse, and when is it abuse and when is it not abuse, and how does the depression play into that? We're just going to tease that out a small bit and explore it more so in general terms also, not just specific to this case, you know, offering a bit of advice for anybody else who might be kind of have any kind of a similar situation. Just to start, Claire, in terms of these issues, would you have come across this much before in your work?
Well, I've come across it actually generally in life. So farming would be sort of part of my own life until the early noughties. And so I would have come across a lot of it being part of, we'll say, the farming community myself. And yeah, certainly a little bit in work. And also, of course, it's at various times that I have replied to problems, you know, there with yourselves. So I think carers are very often forgotten about, and not in a bad way, but I think what happens is when somebody, so we're focusing specifically on farming life and farm families today, but obviously we're aware that depression and different things we'll be talking about can go right across the board in all kinds of you know, places, but as I said, we're focusing on farming. So farming is obviously very, you're living in the rural part of the country, and in the countryside people can be very private, you know, and in the case of depression or other mental unwellness, when somebody in the house is, shall we say, struck down with it or gets it, it's often kept a secret, okay, because we don't want the neighbors to know. I think there's a fear, the stigma unfortunately is still there attached to mental health issues, and it just saddens me greatly that it is, because it delays recovery. In doing my research for today's podcast, I came across some supports that are available for farming families in relation to mental health difficulties. So the IFA have produced a booklet that's aimed to support farming families and for both the sufferer and the carer. Okay. And their booklet is called Mind Our Farm Families, and they can be contacted at 1-890-130-022. Chagas also have produced a booklet, and it's called Coping with the Pressures of Farming. And both of these will focus on mental health and the importance of seeking help and support when things get difficult. And the number for Chagas is 076-111-3533. And that number is available or can be contacted from 9:30 to 12:30 each day and from 2 to 5 in the afternoons. Then you have another organisation, SHINE, And so they provide online training and education programs for people with mental health difficulties and their supporters as well. So it might be worth logging into them as well. Also, Aware have a very good website. And so there is help out there, but it's just sometimes it's not advertised enough for people to be able to reach out to them. And I was just thinking, as I was doing this work for today, wouldn't it be great if the producers of agri products would have a helpline printed on the packaging of all their products? And wouldn't it be great if you could get kind of a laminated card that farmers could, you know, we'll say, stick onto the side of the tractor or on a door in their work buildings in the farm, that sometimes it can be the spur of the moment. We'll make a phone call and it might make all the difference for them. You know, they have a number at hand, and if they're just feeling despair while out in the land, that the number is there and they have the privacy of sitting in their tractor, you know, to ring somebody. It's just a thought. It's just an idea.
That's actually a very good point, Claire. And I was speaking with another lady yesterday, and she made a very similar point in terms of, I suppose, advisors and people coming into yards, giving them specific training in terms of having soft skills to, you know, pick up on things that farmers might say to them. So it's all very much the same thing of just having that information to hand.
Yeah. And I think as well, you know, like we're in lockdown at the moment, so we're very restricted when it comes to reaching out for support as well. And I think that it would be wonderful when lockdown ends, and hopefully that'll be sooner rather than later, that if these organisations who are very much so supportive of farming families, like the IFA and Chagask, maybe Machrane and Ferrima, and maybe the ICA, if these different organisations at different times, if they could arrange workshops or public talks, you know, where a mental health professional could come in and give a talk about, you know, just explain in very basic and, as we say, layman's terms about depression and anxiety and all this, and look at the simple ways they can creep up on us and how they can be managed, and to help just reduce that stigma and help to release it and let it go.
You mentioned earlier there, Claire, just when you were, I suppose, first discussing this issue, you said that this lady was a carer, and that actually has really stayed with me, because I would never have thought of her as a carer. That comes back into the recognising mental and physical health kind of. She, I suppose, she is a carer in the times when her husband is feeling very bad.
She unofficially she's a carer. You know what I'm saying? And this goes on a lot. Like you're an unofficial carer, I suppose, really. And because you're there, you know, and I mean, it happens vice versa as well, I'm sure. But, you know, it's just, it was a lady that wrote in with this particular issue. So I'm just sort of referring to her, maybe, like, she is unofficially a carer as well as being a spouse and a mother and so on and so forth, you know. So, yes, I feel she and so many other people can be very, very much taken for granted. And as I also said there to start, you know, I believe the stigma that is still out there and attached to mental health and mental illness prevents a lot of people from reaching out for help sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and that's a very valid point, that because you've named out a lot of supports there. As you said, maybe there might be a bit more pushing forward in the advertisement, but there are supports there for, you know, families of people who have depression. But I suppose maybe we're not as aware of them because of stigmas, and because, like, that it's not like you've you know, you're after hurting your leg and you'd say it to anybody, kind of. It's something that you might keep very privately.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know from my work that the stigma is very much there right across the board. It doesn't matter what age you are, you know. People just, like, would say, where I would be based, you know, that the buildings are very much, if a person was seen going in the door of the particular buildings I work from, you know, people wouldn't even assume they might be going for counselling. They could be going for other, you know, different kind of treatments as well. They could be going to see there are different businesses, you know, in the same building. And they really appreciate this because, again, just don't want people to think that, you know, they might be experiencing mental health issues, you know. And I think it's just so important to, we need to do more to just release that stigma. I think even with, say, the soaps on TV, they need to bring it in more, and we need to normalize that mental health issues arise just as regularly as physical health issues. And it's nothing to be ashamed about. And the person who, you know, will go and say, look, I am feeling unwell, I don't know, is it anxiety, is it depression, is it something else, but I need help, you know, they're showing fierce courage, and it's not a sign of weakness to ask for help, I suppose is what I'm trying to say here. It's a sign of strength and courage to ask for help. We're all very, very good. I think as a nation, we have very good hearts, and we give and give and give. You know, if you look at all the money that has been raised through the Late Late Show since lockdown, you know, Ryan Tuberty, like millions and millions. But we're very slow to receive. And I think we need to change the mindset here, and we need to love ourselves enough and feel enough compassion for ourselves to know that we deserve help and support.
Yeah, and that's a really important word there, compassion, that you just have a bit of compassion with yourself and enough, I suppose, to, you know, ask for the help and support. I think sometimes the mentality can be out there that, you know, toughen it out would be, I think, is a real Irish mentality kind of.
It is. Yeah, it is. You know, fierce, you know, we've a tendency to not want to look weak. And that goes for female as well as male. You know, other people might think it's more on the male side, but I think sometimes it's females too, you know, they don't want to look weak. And you know, this whole area around mental health, people have internalized the belief that it's a sign of weakness, or it's a sign that you might be overlooked for something if you admit to feeling depressed. But, you know, another way to look at this is the brain is an organ the same as the heart or the lungs or the kidneys. And when we get, you know, if our blood pressure is high, or if we get a chest infection, or if we get a kidney infection, we're straight to the doctor for help, you know. And the brain is simply another organ in our body, and sometimes it gives as well. So of course the most natural thing in the world is to go and get help to bring it back into balance.
And the good thing, I suppose, about just in the case of the letter in this week's Country Living is that, the you know, this lady's husband had gone for help, he had gone to the doctor, and he was accessing those supports. So that was, that was, I suppose, if there was to be a positive aspect to it, that would be, I suppose, what you'd be, yes, you'd be looking at. And
yeah,
what was quite difficult about this, maybe this particular issue, and I know probably other people would experience it as well, is that this lady was quite unsure as to whether, you know, when her husband would be in about a depression, he could be quite controlling, and his behavior would be very different towards her. She was very unsure as to whether this constituted abuse or not. You know, there wasn't any physical violence, but she wasn't sure where the line was there. Do you have any advice for people who might be in that gray area there, Claire?
Yeah, and it is a very gray area. Okay, so in a situation, now I felt from, you know, reading this particular lady's letter, I felt that herself and her husband would have had a fairly healthy relationship until, you know, he became unwell. And I could feel that they both loved each other very much. And I said that in my reply. And, you know, when it starts to deteriorate, so if you've been getting on well prior to this, well, it's probably that bit easier to sit down with your loved one and, you know, and just rather than saying, why are you saying this, or why are you doing that? You know, if we can, why is a very closed question. So to try with open-ended questions, like, what's going on for you? You know, would you like to tell me what's going on for you that you become so grumpy and cantankerous, and what's going on for you that you feel this need to control the things I do or whatever? It's an open-ended question, and it's not pushing the person up against the wall, so to speak. You know, it's not putting a gun to their head. It may lead to, you know, a healthy conversation, and it may lead to a situation where the person will actually be able to say, yeah, I just don't feel well, I'm sorry, maybe I do need to talk to somebody. And, you know, in these situations, that's great. But again, it's one thing, as I said also in my reply, it's one thing talking about your depression, but it's an entirely our mental, you know, unwellness. But you also have to start doing the work in trying to get back on track again. So while it is great in this situation where the husband did talk to the GP and would talk regularly to his wife, but it was still affecting their relationship, and that control seemed to be seeping in, and all that, you know. I did suggest, and I hope that he does go and speak to a counsellor. So there were steps taken there, and hopefully they are continuing, and hopefully everything will be okay for that particular couple. In general life, I would say, of course, again, if you're worried that the situation is leading to an abusive situation, again, just try and talk to the person and try and see, can you get them to seek help? Now, if they're unwilling, I think it's very, very important to let them know that you're not prepared to put up with it. And if you're very worried, I would suggest that, you know, talk to somebody. So I know Citizens Advice provide, you know, they will arrange for people to, will say they do an awful lot of things, but I know one of the things they would provide is that you could speak to, you know, a family law solicitor for 20 minutes. And this is without making any plans, but just that you know your rights. God forbid should the worst happen and the relationship is going to come to an end, you know. And also it might help to, you know, speak with a therapist, because counselling will provide you with a safe and confidential space in which to air your worries, you know, and the therapist will listen and support and help you to make informed choices about your future. And again, there are other support organisations as well, you know, for women who may be experiencing abuse, or men. So reach out. Don't suffer this in silence. And I'd be very blunt, and I will say this now. If somebody hits you, well, that is the day to ring the guards and report it. Because if it happens once, there's a great chance it'll happen again, and it'll get worse and worse as time goes by.
Yeah, and that's, I suppose, it's, I think that's a very important message to have in all this, Claire. We probably, you know, we were talking about grey areas and everything. There is a hard line there.
Yeah, there is, you know. We every adult, when you're over 18, you're the only one that is responsible for your health, your happiness, your safety, your well-being, you know. And yeah. So we have a duty of care towards ourselves to keep ourselves safe, you know, to keep ourselves healthy, to keep ourselves well, to embrace life, to live rather than exist, you know. And so it starts with us, the self-care and the making positive change. Yeah. And it's also important to remember, and I can't stress this often enough, if somebody seeks counselling because they feel their partner, now again, it's not always couples or husband and wife, it can be adult siblings sharing a farm too, you know. But if you feel that there's borderline abuse here that could lead to something worse, just remember that when you talk about the person that's being abusive, they're not judged either. Because counsellors, we look objectively at every situation. So we don't condone anything, but just to know that the other person is never judged. So that when you go away after talking your heart out, don't feel guilty.
Yeah, and I think that's, it's good to know that there is that, as you said, there's non-judgment in accessing those supports. And I suppose just to come on to, you said in your response as well, Claire, about accessing counselling.
Yes.
Do you think people are slow to go to counselling because of that stigma that still is around mental health? And I'd often, from both my personal and my professional life, I'd often hear people saying, oh, it just doesn't work for me. And so I wonder sometimes, is that part of the whole stigma we have around mental health that maybe we're not as willing to actually, I suppose, give it a real good go?
Yeah, I think so. The stigma is definitely part of it then. But you know what I think as well as part of it? And, you know, I've sat on the client's chair as well. You know, counsellors themselves, you know, we would have had our own issues to deal with as we've come through life. And maybe we will have down the road in the future, you know. But so the stigma is one thing, right? But there's also, so we just take the case of abuse. So you feel your husband, your partner, your wife, your adult sibling is becoming more difficult and more difficult to live with. It's one thing knowing it and carrying that knowledge and that burden inside you, but once you verbalize it, once you say it out loud, once you share it there in the therapy room, it really becomes very, very real.
Yeah.
You've said it now, and you have acknowledged it, and that can be frightening. So sometimes a person will come for one session and they might come for two, and then they're not able, they're just not ready yet, you know, to keep going. But a lot of the time they will come back.
Yes, it could, but it could take a bit of time for them to, I suppose, reach out again.
It can, yeah, it can. But in the meantime, you might be ready to talk about your problem, but it's very important that you stay safe. So just remember, have a list of, you know, emergency numbers to call. Have them in your handbag. Have them in your wallet if you're a man. You know, have them somewhere that you have easy access to them, just in case. And just to go back to mentioning control, sorry, I forgot to kind of just focus in on that as well. When a person is controlling, underneath that control, a lot of times, a lot of fear, you know. And again, for that person, counselling can really, really help them to let go of the fear and to let go of being controlling. So it's important to, again, not accept this kind of behaviour. You know, the person that's been abused, that's been controlled, it's very, very important not to accept that kind of behaviour. But equally important to know that the person who is unwell and who has been abusive, they really and truly can be helped, but they need to want to be helped.
And I suppose, just as you said that, I think that's something that's very important maybe to focus in on, that they need to want to be helped. Yeah. And I think that's maybe an important message to get across here today, that, you know, you have to... that someone maybe has to meet you halfway down the road, that you can't be making, I suppose, every allowance under the sun, that there needs to be, I suppose, a bit of teamwork there. Would you agree, Claire?
Yeah, needs to be, yeah, absolutely, 100%. Nobody can really and truly do this all on their own.
Right, yeah, that's exactly it. There's very much a bit of, I suppose, a bit of give and take there. And there's a number of issues arising from this letter, but another one really was, this lady, when these bouts of depression would happen, she would have a lot on her plate. She would be doing all the work on the farm, her full-time job, the kids, the house, and minding the husband. It was a lot. What advice do we have for people who really have so much on their plate like that as well? That, and I suppose maybe that's almost a practical element of this, that this woman was just so busy and that must be also taking its toll on her.
Yeah. So this woman was working... I'd say all hours, morning, noon and night, burning the candle at both ends. And again, it comes back to the self-care. So she or he, so she in this case, right?
But this could be also applicable to, you know, to anybody else really who has a lot on their plate. It's, you know, a lot of people for various different reasons would be in a situation like this where they're doing a lot.
Yeah, yeah. So... there's a beautiful expression that I use a lot in my therapy work, and I would say to the person, people in these situations, be positive and say no. It's very, very important, no matter where we work, to have work-life balance, you know. And because if we don't, we end up experiencing what's called burnout. And burnout is, as I said earlier, it has a detrimental effect on our overall health and well-being. So it will, we can become very, very tired. Our appetite can be affected. We'll either overeat or undereat. So we can either put on loads of weight or become very much underweight. And again, our immune system can be affected. You know, we become angry, etc., etc. So our own mental health will become affected, burned out. So again, it's about, you know, coming off the treadmill and really taking a look at their day, writing down all the things they do and looking at, you know, well, what can I get away with not doing today, or what can I get away with not doing this week? So I don't know, like in some households, you will have teenagers, you might have younger children. And there's a tendency sometimes to let mom or maybe dad or whoever do all the work. And I think a lot of carers, unofficial or otherwise, it's like they have, you know, I'm a doormat written on their foreheads. And the more you do, the more you're expected to do. So in this situation, I think it's very, very important to take a step back and ask for help. So just because a person really experiences a lot of depression, it doesn't render them useless. So they're still able to, I would imagine, for the most part, you know, stack the dishwasher. boil the kettle and make their partner a cup of tea. Okay, small little things can mean a lot. If there are teenagers in the house, now we've all been there, and teenagers and untidy bedrooms, I think, just go hand in hand, like, you know, coffee and cream. And I would say, let the teenagers be responsible for their bedrooms. And if they want to live in a mess, let them live in a mess. It's easier said than done, you know. Yeah. If the laundry basket is pouring out onto the floor, you know, somebody else is quite capable of filling the washing machine and putting on a wash. I think it's very important as well. We have a terrible habit of procrastinating and giving out to ourselves. So coming back to compassion, at the end of the day, it's 8 o'clock in the evening or maybe 9 o'clock, and you're sitting down. It's the first time you've sat down all day. And then you're saying, oh, Jesus, I have the ironing to do yet. Or, oh, my God, I must ring the vet now because such an animal needs to be dosed and blah, blah, blah. You know, the ironing can certainly wait till tomorrow or the day after or the day after. Maybe the vet first thing in the morning or whatever. But focus on all the things that you have done as opposed to focusing on what you have not done. You know, start looking at the glass and see it as much half full as you can rather than half empty. Silence that inner critic. You know, you're doing brilliant, but you're only human, you're not a robot. So I would say redo your timetable and just focus on what really, really needs to be done as opposed to the things that can wait, and get help, you know, get help. There's another thing, just a simple thing. So self-care again comes into this big time. I would say take time out, enjoy a shower in the evening, you know, a nice, hot, bubbly, relaxing shower or bath, you know, if you can. Have your bedroom well aired and nice, fresh linen in it as much as you can, because we sleep better that way. Get out for walks. Try and keep in contact with your friends as much as you can in lockdown. Something that's nice to do is if you're doing your weekly shop, you know, and you have the boot loaded with the bags of a Saturday, I would suggest doing something like going back in and getting a takeaway coffee and just sit in the car for 20 minutes and sip your coffee before you go back home to tear into more chores. In a bigger picture where the farming work has become very, very difficult and the person is not really becoming very well, you know, the person that's sick, I would say maybe it's important to sit back and look at changing your way of farming. You know, if you're dairy farming, is it impossible to continue with it? Do you want to change to, you know, dry stock or suckler herd or whatever, you know? Would it be possible maybe to plant some of the farm and forestry and get a grant every year and earn your money a little bit easier? You know, there are so many options out there. Sometimes when we reach a crisis, it's an opportunity to make positive change and make life a little bit more doable and maybe a little bit easier, you know. So there's an awful lot of things to think about there, but self-care and minding yourself. And Michelle Obama a few years ago was giving a talk when she was first lady to, I think it was a group of 200 women. And she said to them, where do you put yourselves on your to-do list? And of course, they all probably said bottom of the pile. So she said it's very important for women, for carers, nurturers to put themselves on top of their to-do list. So as I said earlier, we have a duty care towards ourselves. We are responsible for our own health and well-being. So let today be the first day of the rest of your life, and it'll be the first day of positive steps towards making life happier and healthier for you and introducing a healthy work-life balance.
That's a very valid point, and especially in terms of some of those self-care tips that you give, Claire, they can be very effective. And I think sometimes when we are so busy, you know, if someone who was so busy was listening to this, they might be saying in their head, who do they don't know what my life is like, or they don't know that I don't have time for this. But it perhaps is that the exact time when you should just take those 20 minutes, when you feel like you absolutely don't even have the time of the day, that you should just take those 20 minutes for the walk, the takeaway coffee, the shower, whatever it is, even when you feel like the day is jam-packed.
Yeah, and you know, it could really help as well. So sometimes we might say take 20 minutes, but if our mind is in the habit of racing and racing and racing, it can be difficult to switch off. So sometimes, again, I would suggest to people, you know, if you're okay and savvy with the internet, you know, download a guided meditation. There's a wonderful meditation called the body scan. And, you know, you get them on YouTube. So if you just Google body scan YouTube and you'll get them, and they can range from 15 minutes to maybe about 45 minutes. So I would say to people, just start with the 15 minutes and tune in. And it just helps you to switch off. And the more we switch off from the everyday mundane worries and cares, you know, the more our whole body starts to breathe again and relax, and you know, and we become more grounded, and we're able to think more clearly about, you know, what needs to be done or not be done. You know, we're able to live life a little bit better and more grounded and more at ease when the more we practice mindfulness. Again, walking out in nature, that's mindfulness as well, you know. But the body scan can be really, really good for somebody that's not actually able to switch off, even though they might have a lovely big mug of coffee in front of them, you know. So tuning into things like that can help. So I suppose evening time might be the best time to try that one. So it's just another little tip there for people.
If you have been affected by any of the issues raised in this week's podcast, you can contact the following organisations. The Samaritans, if you're struggling to cope for whatever reason, on 116 123. That's a free phone 24/7 number. Aware, if you're concerned about your mood or the mood of a loved one's, on 1800 80 48 48. That's a free phone number, 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Women's Aid, for women experiencing domestic abuse, 1800 341 900. That's a free phone number 24/7.
The Irish Country Living Podcast.